God Christ Gurus. God Christ Gurus. May Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, all the great masters, blessings be upon you, to lift us up into their consciousness, to feel their bliss, their beauty, their purity, and their light. May you ever have their grace. Om, Amen. It's lovely to be with you this morning. Reading from the posting today, The Great Frontier. And there's a lovely picture of Papa from his earlier days. Frontier is the limit or boundary of an area or nation. Mentally, it is extreme limit of understanding. And in meditation, we have a frontier when we meet the limit we allow ourselves to surrender to God. For us to continue to make progress in deepening meditation, we must face the inner frontiers that act as resistance. Resistance being the self-imposed boundaries created by the ego mind. The ego mind draws a circumference around itself to define itself. It is what the ego does. The nature of the ego is to say, this is me, and this is not me. This allows the ego to operate in the world according to its own comfort and to make decisions. As a child develops, there comes a fateful day when the mind says, mine. Small children will play a game in which they choose to keep a toy and not give it to the mother, then arbitrarily turns around and gives it to the mother with total delight. The next step is to consider an object mine unless I sell it. Of course, this is how the world operates on a daily basis, with some being misers and others generous. In India, sadhus take a vow to have no possessions and not to stay at any one place for more than 3 days. This discipline is to break the idea of this is mine to eliminate the ego mind. Even in a sadhu world, as Papa humorously writes, one can find ego mind inserting itself, whether it is the position in line for meals being served, or possessiveness of a lota pot for water, or even one's cloth. The sense of position or possession can exhibit the idea of mine in the most subtle of ways. Papa describes how a seeming madman came into a hut he was staying in and demanded that Papa hand over, one by one, every possession he had, which was very little. For Papa, this madman was his beloved Ram, come in this form, and he immediately took it as a test as to whether he had any attachment to these things. Papa cheerfully handed over every item until he was down to his last cloth that Papa wore in modesty. That, too, Papa started to give when the man suddenly changed his mind and said, no, Papa could keep that. The man left, but Papa was in such a state of bliss at having this interaction with God that he merged into his infinite beloved in samadhi and stayed that way until far into the next day, at which time he found himself surrounded by devotees who had come to see him and sat in wonder as to why Papa was reduced to wearing only one small cloth. Your attachment to things are a small thing compared to your attachment to the boundaries of the mind. You sit in meditation, focus on the ajna, the point between the eyebrows. You face your frontier, which is in front of you. It may be the immediate darkness you see with closed eyes, or if your consciousness is expanded, it is the vast but limited sphere of consciousness. you may be in deep state of stillness, when suddenly thoughts about the world create waves upon the mirror-like surface of your mind. I remember many a time in meditation, I had the sense I was dropping deeper, going down through thermal layers of the ocean. Suddenly, some thought would whiplash me back to the surface. Some idea activated worldly consciousness and had taken me from that wonderful state of stillness. On other occasions, I would be uplifted, expanded, like going up in a hot air balloon. In this state of blissful expansiveness, some thought would come along. An attachment, unthinkingly, reached out to this thought or memory. The presence of that thought weighted down the balloon and descended from those heights. It was maddening. It truly was. Oh, to be present to God with no attachments, no artificial limits, no fear of infinite expansion, or to be taken into the minute world of subatomic matter. To go anywhere God takes you without fear or desire is perfect freedom. To go anywhere God takes you without fear or desire is perfect freedom. The active ego mind is transformed into the witness to what is, and all that is divine in origin. When your absorption in meditation transitions into activity in the world, then all sensory input is seen and felt as God living His life through His creation. You and all others, animate and so-called inanimate, are all part and parcel of one divine life. A few months ago, I injured the bicep tendon. As a result, moving my arm in a certain direction overhead or behind creates a blindingly shooting pain. Pain can bring up any number of attachments to the body, resulting in fear, anger, resentment, and depression. It has been my long practice to see pain as coming from God, the pain impulses being activated prana, life energy, traveling at high speed through the nerves to the brain. Excuse me. Life energy traveling at high speed through the nerves to the brain. Prana, coming from God, is nothing but God in that form. To a practice allowing the pain impulse to pass through the brain. Excuse me. Through the brain and into the light, not simply be absorbed in the brain. To affirm life energy in this form is God, just as all other forms of life energy are God. An interesting thing began to happen with the pain from this tendon area. Instead of coming as a pain impulse with internal vision, I saw the shoulder area emit light instead of shooting pain. God is so interesting. When we are in the adventure of exploring God, in creation and beyond, and we challenge the frontiers of limitations, not accepting anything in life as being normal, in the sense of being absent of God, then the normal frontiers dissolve into something more, something greater, something divine. For most of us, this is a process. However, it does not take much reflection to see the various ways in life our minds have created barriers, even beyond our conscious intention, and that these barriers keep us separated from sacred awareness. To know God as bliss, wisdom, light, expansiveness, and the deep, to know Him as our all and all in all, is real freedom, true liberation. Let us journey together until we know, absolutely know, there is nothing but He, nothing but He. And as our dear Swami Satchidanandaji said to do, dive deep, soar high. It's really something to take on your life in sadhana and to decide with the goal in mind that God is the sole power, the sole consciousness, the sole mover in everything that is. Now, in the beginning, we read inspiration from Master and from Papa and other great spiritual masters, from Mother, of course. And we get inspired. We develop an idea, and perhaps we are vouchsafed a glimpse into that world where everything is God. We may walk out into the garden, and there we see flowers in bloom. We see trees that are growing. And I have had this experience where you see the life force subtly going through all the flora and the fauna, animating it, bringing it life. When you think about the mystery that is death and how something dies, now for a plant, its roots may still be in the ground, it still may have water, nutrients, everything is there that provided life for it before the sun is shining. And yet, that plant dies. So you can't say that it's a lack of nutrients or lack of sun or anything else that it needs for life. Something has withdrawn itself. It has gone somewhere. And the same is true for a human body. You see that human body? It's not like it's simply at rest. There is something definitely absent. It can be a felt sense, and yet it is a very strong one. And we know that death is absolutely different than taking a nap or just resting for a while. There is that absolute absence of the life energy. And so we look upon this life and we get glimpses of it in this way. And then inside we start to feel the movement of life energy. It's different than other sensations that we might have in the body. We feel a tingling life force go through this body. We feel a pressure at the medulla, at the back, at the base of the skull, at the back of the head. We feel a vibrancy going throughout our body, or sometimes the lack of it, and we can compare and contrast these two. And in this way, we begin to wake up to the fact that there is something far more to this body, to this creation, to everything that is, than just simply a physical manifestation. Physical scientists will tell you that this body creates the neurons in the brain and the electrons that flow throughout the nervous system, and this makes up the body, which then creates the mind, which then creates the intelligence. And it's all based from the physical. And from a certain standpoint, you can understand why this perspective is there, because if there's damage to the brain, then that person is not able to think or to act or to speak as they did before. And so you say, well, that part of the brain is damaged, and therefore the intelligence is no longer have capability. But for the spiritual scientists, we look at it totally differently. That consciousness is, it predates everything else that has come into existence. And consciousness then stretches out itself, changes its vibration because it's creative in nature. It creates atoms, electrons, neutrons, protons. And from that then come the building structure for this wide universe. They talk about the Big Bang, and everything was condensed matter at one point in a very tiny, compact part. And suddenly there was an explosion, and matter started getting thrown in every which direction. And so we live in this expanding universe. And it's a fine theory as far as it goes. However, where did the life force come from in the first place? Where did the matter come from? There's a lovely story about how scientists had gone through and discovered everything, how to make life. And so they put in a notice to God and said, I think we can do everything you can do. you are dismissed. So God responded, and he says, fine, fine. He says, how about if we put that to the test? And so the scientists were very confident in themselves, said, yes, of course, yes, of course. And so God said, all right, let's create life. So the scientists knew that if they took certain ingredients and they gathered some soil, and God said, no. He says, you get your own dirt. Where does it all come from? And when life disappears out of this body, even though the body has everything it needs, you can stuff food into the mouth, you can pump air into the lungs, and yet life has gone. Where does that life force come? And that is God manifesting himself through this physical universe. And the wonderful thing about that perspective is it starts putting you in touch with these subtle forces. They're not subtle in the sense that you cannot experience them, or they're not powerful when you do experience them. It's just simply that if you are engrossed in this world and the things of this world, you don't notice them. You don't perceive them because they're not part of your awareness. And so you think, well, I can just do fine, just like the scientist says, we can do without God now. And so man thinks that he can do without God. And God is not something that has to be noticed all the time. And so he says, all right, you go out, experiment. You do what you want to do. You explore this vast universe, but I know one day you are going to miss me because I am your very self. I am your very self. And when that knowledge begins to dawn on the human, even for believers in God, that God is out there someplace, I'm always amazed that there are a certain brand of Christians, and I'm sure they exist all around, who see this world as belonging to the devil. The devil won somehow. And this world belongs to the devil. And they look out through their two eyes, their senses, their way of seeing this world, and they see so much violence, so much of everything that doesn't seem to be of God, and they find evidence for this. But the spiritual scientist goes further. He goes underneath. If you want to put it into computer kind of language, he goes beyond just simply looking at the screen. And he goes and looks at the code that's behind the screen. And then he gets in touch with the person who wrote the code, which is God. And it changes his entire perspective, because once you go behind the scenes, you see how much more there is to life. I'd like to read from Master's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. And this is chapter 18, begins with stanza 57. Mentally dedicating all actions to me. Now, when Krishna is talking about me, he's talking about your true self, God within you. Dedicating all actions to me, considering me as the supreme goal, employing buddhi yoga, union through discriminative wisdom, continuously absorb thy heart in me. Isn't that lovely? Continuously absorb thy heart in me. In Master's commentary, Lord Krishna thus exhorts his disciple Arjuna, O devotee, disconnecting your intelligence from the physical ego and its consciousness of being the doer of sense-originated actions, unite your pure discrimination with God, feeling him as the doer of all your actions, uniting your intelligence with the Supreme Being. Keep your heart saturated with him. Keep your heart saturated with him. Now, when we feel that God is the doer, we step aside. In order to step aside, you become a witness. You are the observer now. And this is a tremendously powerful method for getting in touch with your true self. It's like taking a step back from the computer screen and going behind the scenes. Now you are the observer of your thoughts, your words, your actions. But if you are quiet, if you are still, you'll get in touch with more than what your words, thoughts, and actions are. You will start to notice this subtle life force that's flowing through you. Now, Lari Mahasha divided up prana into two different types of prana. There is what you might call the everyday prana, with a small case P, the life force inside of you. And it's for the maintenance and functioning of this body and all of this creation. And it's definitely intelligent because it has purpose. It goes about its business. How is it that your heart beats? Well, you can say that your brain issues instructions to the heart and the heart responds. But how does the brain have the power to issue those instructions? Where does that intelligence come from? You're not thinking about it. And yet it goes on automatically all the time. Or so you hope. And so this is the prana that is behind the scenes. And it is intelligent. But then there is prana with a capital P. And that is the divine life. Now, in one sense, you can say all life is divine, and you would be correct in saying so. But from a human perspective, we can divide it up between the everyday kind of prana and the prana with the capital B, because that prana will be blissful, will be uplifting, will be transforming throughout your entire being. It has a totally different function in that sense. Because you can go an entire lifetime just simply living your life and never be in touch with bliss, upliftment, transformation. Not the kind that comes with this capital P prana. Part of that is what explodes inside your spine from the base, all running all the way up to the top of your head when the kundalini comes to the fore and starts to lift you up into divine consciousness. And so, Master is saying here, reiterating what Krishna said, that with the Supreme Being, keep your heart saturated with Him. You see, your heart is such a quick access to the divine. Now, it's not just simply a sentimentality. It is the feeling of love for God. That is love for bliss, love for light, love for upliftment. And Master continues, when in the performance of actions, the devotee's heart, the citta, or feeling, is identified with the body-bound ego, giving rise to various desires according to the likes and dislikes of the ego, it becomes bound in material objects, sense experiences, and material activities. That is why the Buddha says that life is suffering, because that is the case for most people. They become bound in material objects, sense experiences, and material activities. But when in the performance of actions, the devotee's heart is identified with God, it ceases to be entangled with activities or likes and dislikes, owing to the disappearance of the ego. Every devotee should perform good and meditative actions thinking of God, and by discrimination should remove all sovereignty of the ego, the pretender to the rulership of the health bodily throne. Such a yogi is discrimination absorbed in God. All actions performed only for him finds his heart filled with the bliss of spirit. There is no room for the lesser pleasures of the senses. And this is the advantage of the bhakti yogi. And mother and master and papa and so many of the great ones are all in favor of bhakti yogi. Because in bhakta, that is love and devotion in your heart, you have a positive idea that you're moving towards, a positive feeling. Now, dhyana, will use his discrimination, and he will say not this and not that, and rule everything else out until the image of God is revealed. It is like the story of the two stones that were in the temple. And the one stone was the top stone of the steps going up to the image of God. And the other stone was the image of God himself. And so it was late at night, there are no pilgrims around. And the stone step said to the stone statue, "Hey, you up there. You and I are made up of the same stuff. We're both stone. And yet pilgrims come and they step all over me and pay no attention whatsoever to me. But they bow down, they worship you, they put sandal paste on you and flowers and worship you in all ways. Can you explain this to me?" And the stone statue said, "Well, the master builder, the sculptor, he started with you, actually, to reveal the image of God inside of you, to chip away everything that was not of God. But you resisted so much, you yelled out with so much pain and distress, that he finally put you aside, and he started to work on me." And I thought, well, the master sculptor is not just doing nothing. There must be some purpose in all that he is doing here. And so I was patient, even though it was difficult and it was painful. And gradually the sculptor removed all the dross, everything that was not of the image of God. And gradually the image of God was revealed. Now that image was always inside the stone, even as it is in you. But for you, it's still covered with the dross. For me, everything that is not of God was taken away. Isn't that a beautiful story? Beautiful story. And it illustrates so much of the truth that goes on within our spiritual work and our sadhana. When you think that the image of God is already inside of you, and you focus on that, and you take the blows, because you know that it's all working towards revealing the image of God inside of you. But your mind is always focused on God, always looking to reveal the God nature inside of you. That is a far different function for the mind than for the mind to be trying to remove those things that are not part of the image of God. When you feel bhakti, when you feel that positiveness towards God, when you look for that image of God, it thrills your heart. Love is the most powerful human force and divine force inside of all of this creation. So when you awaken to love of God more than this world, you are really on the fast track towards finding God realization. You combine that with the techniques that we have been taught, meditation, Kriya Yoga, deepening thought, working through service, and seeing God in all creation. And you've got an unbeatable combination of going directly to God in the fastest possible way. Now, it doesn't mean that you won't go through difficulties. It doesn't mean that you won't go through pain. It's one of the things about Mother. She is always honest with us. And then we get into the middle of it, and it's our pain, and it's our difficulties, and we don't like it so much. And from a human standpoint, naturally enough. But when we have that faith in God, and we look to Him, and when He stretches us as far as we can go, and then stretches us a little bit further, we cry out to Him, we give it all to Him, we look to Him for our sustenance, for our purpose, for love and compassion, for anything that the human spirit cries out for. And we look to God for it, and we don't turn away from God. I remember going through the dark night of my soul, and it lasted for 2 years. And believe me, that 2 years seemed like an eternity when I was going through it. Somehow, I never turned from God and grew. It's not that I had perfect apprehension of them, but I never doubted that what I was being taken through was absolutely at God and Guru's direction. Mother was taking me through these experiences, and I had to get through them the best that I could. Now, I won't say I did it perfectly. Not at all. I struggled. I struggled as anybody else struggles. I made mistakes along the way, some doozies. But I didn't turn away from God. I kept going towards Him. And that made the difference. Because when we keep our mind focused on God, it draws us through the experience, through the delusion, through the darkness, through everything that is an obstacle to revealing the image of God inside of you. And that is the main thing. It is the main thing. Now, when we are like Papa and we shoot like a flaming arrow going straight to God, that's the most wonderful thing. I don't recommend looking to the left or looking to the right. Not at all. It creates tremendous amount of pain. I am just saying that if that happens to you, then just get right back on the path and keep going. Don't let go. Don't turn away. Don't allow shame. Don't allow fear or anything else to dissuade you. Because it's not worth it. It can take us away and put us through lifetimes of experiences where we have to learn the hard way. And then finally we come back to the path and we find that the very same obstacles are in front of us as they were before. The same frontiers are there. Now, Master continues, with heart absorbed in me, this is Krishna speaking, with heart absorbed in me and my grace, then thou shalt overcome all impediments. But if through arrogance thou wilt not heed me, then thou shalt meet destruction. And that's what I am speaking about. If clinging to self-conceit, thou sayest, I will not battle. Fruitless is thy resolution. Prakriti, inborn nature, will force thee to perform thy duty as a soldier, as a sense fighter. And this is something that Master talks about when he's talking about entering into the battle and the war. It's the war with those tendencies that are inside of us. The sense tendencies that want to take us away from God. And that is the kind of warrior that Arjuna is. The Lord tells his devotee, Master says, if you identify yourself with the ego, O Arjuna, you will imbibe in temporary, unreasonable dislike for a righteous war, and thus decide not to go to battle. But if such an ill-considered resolution would not last long, compelled by your inner instinct as a soldier, you would have to fight. While the foregoing explanation would apply to the outer personal life of Arjuna, there is a deeper meaning which refers to the devotee's inner struggle, the spiritual struggle. The Lord thus reveals his wisdom. Through the help of God, O Arjuna, your innate nature from past incarnations has made you a veteran fighter of the senses from your very birth. But your temporary identification with the physical ego makes you feel that to heed is its behest, to refrain from destroying your inimical kinsmen, the material sense pleasures, is just. This is a fleeting, erroneous conclusion. As a born sense fighter, your own nature will compel you to act otherwise, so it is better for you to concentrate on establishing the blessed kingdom of the soul. Thus, with its soldiers of discrimination, calmness, self-control, peace, concentration, love of goodness, and other divine qualities, and by the power of yoga and dispassion, you may defeat the physical ego with its undesirable horde of misery-making sense pleasures. Now, what Krishna is describing here is when we're in the midst of battle, we're surrounded. Now, in the story of the Gita, there are seven armies that are on the side of Arjuna and Krishna. There are 10 on the side of Duryodhana and ignorance. And there is mystical meaning to this. The seven represents the seven chakras, or the seven spiritual centers that are in your spine and your brain. The 10 are the 10 qualities of the mind. You have the sense receptors for the 5 senses, and you have different stimulations that come. Light stimulates in through the eyes. Touch creates feeling through the skin. Taste through the mouth. Smelling through the nose. Hearing through the ears. So on. And so you have these sense receptors, and that's in the body. And then you have the sense interpreters that are in the brain. And that's another 5 qualities of the brain that interpret your senses. I was speaking about pain earlier in the reading, and an interesting thing that they did back before they had anesthesia. The theory was that in battle, men would get hurt very badly, sometimes losing a limb, sometimes very, very badly hurt, and would not even notice it while they were in the midst of battle. And so the theory ran, in battle, there is all of this noise and confusion, and it distracts the mind from being in the sense receptors. They get overwhelmed with all of that. So, for instance, if they are going to pull somebody's tooth, they'd have large drums and kettles, and they'd start banging away on them, making a tremendous cacophony. And the idea is that they would overwhelm the senses, and then he would pull the tooth. And the person might not even notice that their tooth had been pulled because their ears were filled with the banging noise. Perhaps there's some sense in that. We just are thankful that we have anesthesia today. So we have all of this input into the brain, and then we have the brain that interprets. But if you're reading very deeply or concentrating very deeply and somebody's talking to you, you may not hear them. You may not even register that somebody's talking because your mind is so dedicated towards what you're doing. Your concentration is so deep. When your meditative mind becomes that concentrated, then your life force is withdrawn from the efferent and the afferent nerves. It's withdrawn up through the spine and into the higher centers, and they are activated. Now, when you are in a state of bhakti, of love, of devotion, you are drawing your life force up to your heart center. Your focus is on God. And as a result of that, you're not disturbed by the things of the senses in the way that you might ordinarily be. You are in love with God. You feel that love. You feel that bliss. And that becomes more important to you than anything else. I say, become a connoisseur of God. A connoisseur of bliss. A connoisseur will learn to distinguish all of the different flavors, all of the different smells, everything that comes with whatever they're an aficionado of. And when you are a connoisseur of bliss, you are paying attention to all the ways that God moves inside of you, the way that bliss lifts you up. You don't easily turn away from bliss to the world. It's so easy when we're done with spiritual service or spiritual meditation that we stand up and we immediately turn the attention to the world, and everything that we had experienced during the spiritual service or meditation, it just goes out the window. It's as if it means nothing to us. And this is a terrible thing to do. The thing to do is to learn to be a connoisseur of it, to love it, to be engrossed in it, to notice all the subtle varieties, all the expansion. Or sometimes God takes you into the minute world of subatomic. This has happened to me. And you find yourself under the amidst the atoms and electrons, neutrons and protons. And you're as tiny can be. Or you can expand out in consciousness and you can spread out all over this vast universe. It's really a tremendous life we live. And the inner potentiality is without limit. But we stand on these boundaries. And oftentimes we allow them to hem us in without even really thinking about it. You know, sometimes people get dissuaded from meditation because they get bored or nothing is happening. And they don't realize they're playing a part in that limitation. It is their own ego that has circumferenced around them and has shorn them off from the divine life. God is fascinating, interesting, revelatory, transforming. It is the most exciting, most wonderful, most beautiful path you could possibly imagine. Because it transports you above even the beauty of this universe and all creation. And it is beautiful. We live in a magnificent universe. And yet, that is just the footstool of the divine being. There is so much more. But we do not challenge ourselves. We do not really take ourselves seriously. So if we are to do that, then we look to go beyond the things of the world, the things of the senses. We challenge ourselves to go further, to dive deeper, soar higher. Every day, let us make that our challenge. Let us not rest easy. You know, Master used to say, I meditate until I make God contact. And I don't stop meditating until I do. This is a wonderful thing, and I understand that people have schedules and busy lives. But to never do that, there is no excuse for that. To be able to organize our lives in such a way that we can set aside some time. When I went into a year of silence and solitude, I knew that when I started in, I would have a certain rajasic nature because I've been constantly traveling to the different centers, giving talks, seeing people, and making all the preparations that were necessary in order to do this. So for the first 2 weeks, I felt that those thoughts, and I watched them, I observed them as they went through, and gradually they began to settle down, and that was just the beginning. It was a whole year of allowing the mind to come down, to settle down, to get established in that deeper sense of self. That is what we want, you see. Is we want to become so absorbed in the heart of God and God in our heart that it becomes a continuous meditation. Whether we are being active in this world or whether we are withdrawn into His being. The two have merged and have become one. God, who is infinite, without form and beyond all creation, expresses Himself and becomes everything that is, and then withdraws Himself back into Himself. And our meditation is like that. We can withdraw ourselves so completely in Him that we're totally absorbed in Him. And then we open these eyes and we express ourselves out through this creation. You see, we're doing exactly what God has done and is doing. And then we withdraw ourselves back into ourselves. And then we express ourselves back out. This is God's nature. It is our nature because we are made in His likeness and His image. There's no doubt about that. And so why would we not be able to do what He does, being made in His likeness and His image, you see? It's all there. It's all there. And yet, look how little we choose to explore Him. Lahiri Mahashaya came as an example of one who could live in this world but not be of this world. And he proved that even with an active life, Rajasi Janakananda, Master's great disciple, he too was very active in this world. He ran a few companies, very big insurance company. He had other kinds. He went out and he drilled for oil, and he just had a Midas touch. And he discovered oil on a plot of land that other people had given up. And so he was very active, very active. And at his home life, it was not very receptive to all this spiritual stuff that he was into. And it was not very welcome there. When Master came to visit, they would wait until Rajasi's wife would leave the house, and then Master would come over and see him for a while. And other devotees as well. It's a sad thing in a way, but the point is, it didn't stop Rajasi. It didn't stop him. And he would go into work early. He would close his office door and he would meditate there. Because there he was total king, I guess. Nobody could tell him what to do. He was the boss. And he would go in early and he would dive deep into meditation. And then he would start the day. Dr. Lewis, a dentist with a full-time practice, and he had some stairs that he went up, and then there was a landing with a bench, and then some more stairs that went up to his office. And every morning, before he would take that second step of set of stairs, he would sit down on the bench, and he would close his eyes, and he would look for the spiritual star. And he would not ascend up those other steps until he had seen that star. And then I guess he thought he was ready for his work day, and he would go on up and he would start his practice. We have wonderful examples of those who live in the world but not of the world. I worked for many years with these Kundalini experiences. They started in 1976 and continued on through all the years that I was working. And sometimes I had more than one job, and sometimes I was in full-time work and full-time school. And so there's a lot of demands, and I had family and family demands. And so there was a lot going on. And yet God was being active, volcanically active, all through that time. Now, I cannot say that I always did it all in complete and perfect balance. It was a challenge, a great challenge. But I stuck with it. And as a result, God gradually allowed me to be able to do all the things that I do. I can tell you still that when he took me out of the professional life that I had had, it came as a bit of a relief. It was a bit of a relief because now I could just be with him. And I didn't have to divide my attention between God and the world and try to integrate the two, which was a big challenge at times. But I could just be with him. But that was after many years of the other. And if I can do it, you can do it. You definitely can do it. So let us take the challenge. Let us move toward our realization of God. and not be dissuaded. And if we make a mistake along the way, let us pick ourselves up and keep going. This is the great challenge, but it's a wonderful life. And the rewards that we get when you experience God, when He becomes part and parcel of your entire being, when you are integrated in Him and He into you, oh, there is nothing better. Nothing better. And then you will look back and you will see all the trials, everything that you went through, and you will thank God for them. Because it was through those trials that you were purified and perfected and made into the right product that God could utilize and express Himself through. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. Victory to God within you. Victory to God that that light may spread all over this world. Just imagine a world in which people all over the world were aspiring for their oneness with Him, in service to Him. How that would change and transform this world. It could literally make it a heaven on earth. It wouldn't mean that everything would be perfect. But what a difference than it is today. It truly would be. So pranams, I bow to the light within you. May God and Gurus and the great masters' blessings be upon you, now and always. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.